this week's episode of the Rugby Paper Podcast, we turn our attention back to the most recent pivotal round of fixtures in the Gallagher Premiership running, as well as looking ahead to European Champions Cup and Challenge Cup rugby this weekend. Joining myself and the columnist today to do that is Gloucester and South African back rower Ruwan Ackerman. A tighter turnaround this time. It's the Tuesday following the Women's Six Nations finale and a pretty pivotal weekend in the Gallagher Premiership as Leicester Tigers are no longer in the hunt for those top four places. We've got Ruwan Ackerman of Gloucester joining us in about half an hour, but that gives us time, us being myself, Brendan and Nick, to discuss all things Gallagher Prem. Nick missed last week. Brendan, you made possibly the most fleeting podcast cameo ever been. Did you enjoy that? You arrived with 5 minutes to go and left without saying a word. So did you enjoy?
Well, a slight exaggeration. I arrived after 20 minutes, but it ended after about 35. And all, I think all, my sole contribution was to laugh at one or two of Chewy's cracks, actually. So, but anyway, it was.
Did enjoyable. He pay you?
Paid him.
I enjoyed listening to Marlene Packer, though. She's very good value.
She was very good value and obviously bagged a try at the weekend.
Yeah, absolutely.
Congratulations to the Red Roses. Just very briefly on that before we get going with the Gallagher Prem stuff. Do we think Red Roses are now, with the way they played, especially the way they finished in rounds 4 and 5, Rugby World Cup favourites? Brendan, I'll start with you.
Oh, you would think so. I mean, they're always going to be there or thereabouts, and with home advantage and with a definite progression in their play now. They really have some weapons to use there. So no, very, very impressive. I mean, beating France like that away at any period, at any level, at any time is good. So that was an outstanding season there by the ladies, and they should be very proud.
There was a very, very clear and very linear sense of progression, which we thought would, well, had culminated in the Ireland game. But what we didn't expect was maybe that they'd even add to it against France. And we were saying with Marley last week that it was going to be tight. And in the end, it was pretty comfortable.
Yeah, I'm afraid that I'm going to not throw a spanner in the works, but I'm going to be less effusive. I think I think that there are two teams that are, you know, in clear water. The other team hasn't been in action. The last time they played, the other team won, and they won a World Cup that England were favourites to win, even though it was in New Zealand. The odds will be more in their favour here. I don't think there's any in England's favour here. But the idea that New Zealand will be standing still while England make progress, I think, is probably wishful thinking. I wonder whether England, when England are put under real defensive pressure, which I don't think that they have been at any stage in this Six Nations, apart from maybe a bit in the second half against France, whether they will be as, you know, obviously as effective as they have been. New Zealand will put them under defensive pressure. And I'd say that New Zealand's attacking game is still at a level, from what we saw at the last World Cup, just a level, a notch above. So we'll see.
I think all that we can say, and you're right in saying that, Nick, is obviously New Zealand won't be standing still, but say there was a gap, and obviously that gap was a point, and, you know, England's were 14 women, and you could make an argument that they could have won that game. But say there was a gap, that gap has been narrowed for the moment, the way we see it, simply partly because we haven't seen the Black Ferns play.
Yeah.
But you are right in that the Black Ferns will make some progress, but I think England have put their hand up and said, right, we're going to be ready come World Cup time, regardless of what the Black Ferns are bringing. So that's great.
I mean, England are trying to play an all-court game. And I think that they're, you know, clearly against not particularly exacting opposition, they've made progress in that regard, no question. Whether New Zealand pump up in their forward game or not as a counter to it and maintain their the backs presence that they have, we'll see. You know, I just reserve judgment until I see what New Zealand are doing.
No, very fair. Slight correction from me, by the way, 3-point game, not 1-point game before. Yeah. Kiwis come at me in the comments section. Let's have a look at the Gallagher Premiership. And like I say, Ruwan Ackerman's joining, but we'll focus on those in contention for those top four spots. Twickenham was the big one at the weekend, the big summer kickoff. Northampton were first place, Harlequins fifth. Harlequins bagged a big win. We're going to start with the controversy, though, which is the Carl Dixon, Danny Kerr incident. And I said straight away at kickoff, I wasn't sure Carl Dixon should be reffing a Harlequins game, especially one of that magnitude. And it's a bit of a sticky one because obviously it's not quite the same as nationality. But then what happened was, for those that didn't watch the game, Danny Kerr got yellow carded in the first half for a high tackle on Courtney Laws. Quite impressive for Danny Kerr to even go high on Courtney Laws, but there you have it. And then in the second half, Danny Kerr appeared to push Alex Mitchell illegally through a ruck, and Carl Dixon reached to his pocket and then stopped himself. They had a look at it and it was just given a penalty. Carl has come under the pump, obviously being an ex-Quins man, an ex-teammate of Danny Kerr himself. Guys, what do we make of it?
Well, that's a very good explainer there, Ollie. Listen, I've got huge reservations about this. Like you, I don't think he should have been refereeing that match. And it's fractionally different to a national guy reffing the national side. But, you know, he's a guy who was with Danny Kerr at Harlequins for 9 seasons. He's a mate, a friend, a colleague. And it's not that long ago. I think it's almost putting him in an impossible position, regardless of whether you think he's a good ref, bad ref, indifferent. I think he's a bit maverick. He has good moments and bad moments, but he shouldn't really be reffing that. And I don't see why that's so impractical. I mean, how many ex-professional rugby players we got at this elite level of reffing? Not many. So if he has to stand down from Quinn's matches, I don't think it's that big a deal, that big an issue, because you could predict this happening. You could predict it. Lots of people on social media last week were saying, you know, he makes occasionally odd maverick decisions. And if one of them favours Quinn's, he's going to get it. Now, it was an appalling decision, to be honest. And like you say, he definitely went for his pocket to start off with, stopped, thought better of it. Now, did he see who it was? Did some subconscious thought come in? You know, he's known Danny half his rugby life. Possibly. But the thing is, the accusation can be made, whether that was a factor or not. So it left a bad taste. Quinn's absolutely deserved to win that match. But at the time of that decision, the match was very much live. Saints were on a bit of a resurgence, trying to, you know, one last effort to get back on
turn. It was definitely in the balance. That match was in the
balance. That's the point. It was in the balance then.
If they'd scored then, that would have altered the script. Look, my view is that I'm not sure that he should not referee Harlequins. I think that's too big a call.
Hi, gents.
Hello.
Hiya. I've just got Rue with me.
No, all good. Oh, you guys are early.
Training finished slightly early, yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, well, we're just discussing the Harlequins-Northampton game. If Rue wants to chill for 15, 20 minutes, all good. Equally, if he wants to join us, he's more than welcome.
Yeah, I think... Is that okay if he jumps in straight away?
Yeah. By all means,
He's literally here now. Sorry about that.
No. Absolutely fine. All right, well, here comes Ruan Ackerman a little bit early.
Rugby player early shock.
Yeah.
Hi, Ruan.
Vince, you all right?
Hi, Ruan. Yeah, not bad. How are you?
I'm good.
Good. We're just in the middle of... I'm just in the middle of holding forth about... Carl Dixon's decision in the Harlequins Northampton game. What I was going to say is that I don't think that he should be precluded from or prevented from refereeing Harlequins games. The proviso on that is that he should not be refereeing players that he had a very close relationship with as a fellow pro. So in this instance, I would have said, it's right, and the warnings before the game were right, that because of those things, he should not be refereeing a game like that. When Danny Kerr's retired, and all the other players that he had an association with,
Joe Marler, perhaps,
of which there aren't very, very many left, I would imagine, then the finger can't be pointed in the same way. But in that particular instance, because he was, you know, he was with him at the club for so long, because they will have had, presumably as rivals, in the same position, quite a you know, a reasonably robust and strong relationship and so on. You're right. There was a double take. Yeah. When he realized who it was, when he realized that he was already on a yellow, you know, and he was given also, to be fair, he was given a get out clause. The RFU's attempted explanation of it afterwards did not convince me one little bit.
It wasn't needed. It wasn't needed.
No.
It had to stand alone.
It was stone cold. And, you know, it is a salutary lesson to, you know, to administrators at the RFU, to referee organizers and so on, that there are instances where they need to look very more closely than they did at compromise referee, because in a way that's what they've done. And I agree. I think that Carl Dixon, you know, needs, you know, I mean, he needs to sort of examine himself in this one as well, because he made a, you know, it's a serious error of judgment in a big game. The fact that he's been exonerated by the RFU, I don't think is going to convince many people in the rugby public at large that he was right in any way, shape or form.
Guys, let's interrupt that discussion and come back to it. Ruin, sorry, you kind of dropped in when Nick was coming in off the long run there. He's now finished his run-up by the sound of things. Let's sort of flip the episode. How was training, Ruin?
Yeah, it was good. We obviously with the Sunday game, we had like a bit of a recovery thing yesterday. The boys that played. And then today we had a nice little installment of the plan for the week, how we want to take this week on, and then just had a nice little field session to get the body up and running again and going. So obviously there's a massive buzz between the boys with the big week that we've got, a lot of excitement. So yeah, we just need to it's at a stage now of the season where physically you can't do much more. It's more preparing mentally for these big games.
Ruin, yeah. It's been a bit of a Jekyll and Hyde season. And you've got yourself in a situation where you're producing lots of good rugby in the cup, in the two cup competitions, not so good in the Premiership. Is that almost becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy, and you're subconsciously saving all your best for the cup matches?
I mean, in the beginning of the season, you wouldn't have said so. But I think, as you said, the season unfolded. We obviously did not have the start we wanted in the Prem. And then we kind of not shifted our minds, but we put a lot of pressure on ourselves as well to perform in Europe and in the Prem Cup. We were really focused on that. And like you said, we did play some good rugby, especially in that Prem Cup. And then a lot of focus shifted to Europe, where we as a team, we enjoy the challenge. And Europe in a whole is a really good competition, with having different countries involved, and you're playing it in against different opposition that you don't play every season so many times. So that in itself is a challenge. And knowing that we have been doing well in Europe this season, and giving ourselves the opportunity to have a home knockout, home quarterfinal, and the position to be in a home semi-final, I think kind of excites the boys more. Did it take a little bit of pressure in the Premiership? I think when you look at the table and where we found ourselves, just before that big break, we kind of talked about the last few games before that big break that we had, and the one or two games that we slipped off there that kind of put us out of that run. We kind of regrouped again, and kind of, you almost, I don't want to say accepted that you've out of it, because you don't want to go into a game with the thought of you just playing it for the sake. But you definitely make the excitement levels of having opportunity to play in a semi-final in Europe, obviously, is a bit different than just playing in a Prem game where you kind of know you're out of it already.
I mean, the reality is two bits of silverware would represent a successful season, and you're just two matches away from that.
Well, no, exactly. I mean, obviously, you want to play. The Prem is a massive competition. You want to be successful in that competition. But like you say, I think any club that can go to the end of a season and you win two silverwares before a season starts, and you've been told that you can win two silverwares, is any club will, I think, take that. So, like you said, it's it's probably not the season that we wanted in the start, but we've got the opportunity to finish on a high, and that's all the focus is there now.
Are you how happy would you be with the idea of promotion and relegation being reintroduced into the Premiership? Because you know there's no jeopardy at the bottom at the moment at all, and you know people point to football and say, look, you know for fans to be really engaged, you need to have you know people fighting for things at both ends of the table. And the moratorium on promotion and relegation is meant to come to an end next season. So, how do you feel about the idea of promotion relegation being back on the table?
I think obviously the challenge in it all is where the financial aspects of where clubs are at. But I think from a competition and from a supporter perspective, like you say, it brings that bit of extra edge and fire to a season because you can't just go through the motions when you're kind of at a stage where, let's say, the bottom three teams are 3 to 5 points from each other. That will bring excitement to the top of the league and the bottom as well, between supporters from those clubs, from supporters from the league below that can have the opportunity to maybe move up. I was way back at the Lions when they got kicked out of Super Rugby, and then they need to find themselves back into Super Rugby. As a supporter, when I was thinking I was still a young kid back then, you were very excited to know that the team is playing the team that finished at the bottom of the log in the Super Rugby, to have themselves an opportunity to move back up. And with all the hard work that goes into it, if the team finds a way to win that game and to get moved up, I think every team deserves to work hard and to get rewarded. So I do 100% agree that it's something definitely to think about and to look at. The challenge is obviously is, will it fit into travel stuff, season competitions? Is the financial stuff in there? But it's definitely something that brings a bit of edge to competitions.
And it does it come also with, you know, people talk about the pressure on professional sportsmen, and you know that it's not everybody sort of thinks it's a dream existence, but you know there is pressure, there's internal pressure to perform, and so on and so forth. Do you view that just as part and parcel of being a professional rugby player?
Yeah, 100%. I think the funny thing is besides the pressure that the game brings itself, especially in these big tournaments, I mean, if you just think about the sort of pressure that clubs like ourselves that's playing in a semi-final, the pressure that team like Northampton Saints will have going down to Leinster on the weekend. I mean, just this is an occasion where Northampton's been playing really good rugby, and you've got Leinster that's always been playing good rugby, and then both teams going at it. There's always that pressure, but then there's also the personal lives of players as well. They've been dealing with the pressure that the game and the sport brings for the weekend's occasion, but then you need to go back home this afternoon and you need to deal with normal life pressure as well, with kids and family and parents and stuff. So there's constant pressure, but that's part of being a professional sportsman is, you need to accept that pressure. You need to kind of not get used to it, but that is what makes rugby and sports so nice, is to be able to deal with that pressure and to move forward. But you need to accept as well that pressure sometimes brings people love, especially spectators love pressure, and they love situations where pressure brings big games. Big games brings more people, more excitement. So it's a fine balance, but it's a I personally enjoy pressure. It makes you stay on edge. So, especially for the game. So, it's for me, I see it as more as a good thing. It's how you just deal with it, I think.
Yeah, a lot of players thrive on it, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, talking of that,
You
Ruan,
mentioned. Sorry, Brendan, go on.
sorry, Benetton, as you well know, having a pretty good season, and they got particularly strength in the back row. You, I think, will be lining up probably against Seb Negri,
Yeah.
Lamoureux. They got all sorts of options at number eight. Has it got to the stage where you have to do any particular homework at this stage, or do you know enough about these guys and enough about Benetton to have a pretty good idea what will be coming your way up front on Saturday?
It's a bit of both. I think if you look at how players, obviously, if you look at especially their back row, it's they play for Italy as well. Sometimes they've got a different way of how they play international compared to at club at their club teams. It's probably the big difference is how teams play compare URC to Premiership rugby. Every player plays a bit rugby because the comp different rugby because of how competitions is. If you look at URC, it's a bit more quicker, expansive rugby. So in that sense, you kind of find that players' playing style changes a little bit due to different coaches or all that sort of stuff. But in general, you see each other and you watch as players. You also watch rugby on off weekends. You'll watch, especially if you know you're going to play a team in a week or two, you tend to lie on the couch and watch them play and see how they are playing. And they have quality back rowers. I've actually spoke to Stephen Varney yesterday, and I said to him, like, obviously Negri is a really good player. I'm looking forward to play against him. I think it's been a few years since we last played them as well. So loads of respect for him as how he plays. Especially in a team that's always underdogs in Italy, and he always steps up to do the big games and throws his body around. So in that sense, it's going to be another challenge. And it's also nice to play back rows that you don't play every year twice. So in that sense, it's another good challenge.
You mentioned about pressure, and you also mentioned the phrase going through the motions with the Gallagher Premiership. How do you go about, or just compare last week to this week, for example, just the mindset? Obviously, tough loss to Exeter at the weekend, who were very, very impressive. But what's the mindset shift between the 2 weeks, given that you were going into a game against Exeter that sure you can carry momentum into that Challenge Cup game, but it doesn't have a bearing on your season in the way that this week's game does. So is there a different way that you naturally go about it, or have you noticed a different mood in camp?
I think that is probably the biggest challenge for the difference between great teams and good teams, and is to find that balance of you can't just think of this week, oh, I'm going to tick a few boxes, get through my normal training week, and then play the game, see what happens. But next week's the big game. I think as a player myself, you need to prepare yourself, and there's certain things as that I wanted to kind of achieve in the week. If it's maybe trying a new different stuff, how to approach a week come game day, how you feel on game day, as it was a 3 o'clock game on the weekend as well. So there's certain things that you as a player try to tick off and take the emotional side away from it, because this week's a lot more emotion to it. There's a lot more pressure on it. There's a lot more expectation on it. So without even changing anything in the beginning of the week, there's already different kind of pressure on this week. You see how people talk about it. People that usually don't message you every weekend will message you now on a Monday and say, listen, big week, semi-final, looking forward, how are you feeling? So that sort of stuff kind of comes in on a week, on a Monday that I didn't have last week Monday just because of the occasion for the week.
Gloucester's very much a rugby town, and I guess we've heard anecdotes from players in France how if they lose at home, the butcher 1 week will be giving them the prime cut of meat, and the next week they'll get a lump of gristle. What's it like in Gloucester? Do the fans sort of let you know whether if they think that you were off it, as I'm sure a few did after the game against Exeter?
I think very much so. I think that's one thing that since I've been at Lost, I've probably enjoyed the most is coming from growing up in Pretoria and going to games at Loftus and stuff, and rugby being so big of a sport back home in South Africa. You grow up with rugby and talking about rugby since you're a kid, and then you go come to England and you see Gloucester, and there's no other big sports around Gloucester. It's rugby. It's rugby focus. And that's one thing that I enjoyed. And as you keep playing and you speak to fans after the game, winning or losing, you start to recognize faces as the years goes on, people finding at the same spots, and you tend to look or walk after a game and winning, you see how happy they are. Losing, you see they're still happy, but they look a little bit different because obviously a result and stuff. So you tend to start to learn people that you see on same places. But the thing I enjoy kind of the most is when you win, they say comments like, "Oh, you made my week so much better. I had a really bad week, but this win really cheered me up." But it's the ones that you lose and it's the same bloke and you can see, "Oh, I had a tough," they usually say they've got a tough job or something and you couldn't get them the win. It's those ones where you feel bad because you let yourself down and you let the supporters down who's had hard weeks, and then they spend their time and their effort to come and watch you and try to get a good result, and then you kind of let them down. Obviously, if Gloucester itself, if you're in the middle and the hearts of Gloucester, I think some fans tend to be a bit more honest with you, which, fair enough, they are allowed to say their opinion and stuff. But you tend to find, hopefully, if you keep playing as a player, you play good enough, win or lose, they tend to give you more compliments than negative stuff.
Yeah.
I was going to say, can we briefly talk about wings? Because obviously the departure of Lewis Rees-Zammit would have been a bit of a blow. I don't know if it was a shock, but certainly a blow. A major strike runner who, to my eyes anyway, played better for Gloucester than he did sometimes for Wales. But then on the other hand, I've been very, very impressed with Josh Hathaway in the last three or four matches I've seen him. He looks like an incredible talent, a bit under the radar at the moment. So just talk to, you know, those two wings there, Ruin, Lewis Rees-Zammit and Josh Hathaway.
Yeah, like you say, I think they both, we obviously knew Zam from when he started. He was kind of special. His pure pace that he had to outrun wingers, even that's supposed to be quick, he made them, some of them, look slow or average, was the thing that excited. And as he's still very young, but as he got more mature, I think almost as a player, you had that feeling that teams are kind of a little bit threatened by him and the threat he brings to a team, because he's got that space and that ability to do something from nothing. And very much similar with Josh. He's very much, like you say, I think he's still under the radar, but there's a lot of potential with him and we've seen glimpses of it. And he's what excites me personally from him is he's the sort of player that also can do something from nothing, and it's usually those sort of players that, you know, has got a lot of ability and skill to be really good players. The biggest thing probably for Joss at this moment is to mature into a position that he fancies, and to grow in that position, and not to make one game you amazing and the next game you average. Is to find that balance, but he's definitely got all the capabilities, and we see it in training quite often where he finds himself on one-on-one positions in training, and then he just finds a way to get all around him or to score the try. And then you as a forward, obviously that one-on-one you just tend to go straight, he finds a way around you or something. And I personally always measure when you find backs that can make you feel uncomfortable to defend, they are really good backs. And Zam, obviously, when you find him in space, I hated being across him because you know he's going to step in and go around you. And with Josh, he's got the capability to step, go around you, all that little kicks he does. So he's definitely got a lot of potential.
Yeah. One guy I'd like to just ask you about is the man from Siberia, Gotsov. I'm intrigued by him because, you know, people who are expert connoisseurs of scrummages consider that he's a very, very fine operator. And I know that you had about, I think you won 6 of 7 games with him at Tighthead, virtually on the bounce. I'd just like to hear a little bit about, you know, how he fits in. I'd heard that he's become a bit of a cult figure for the shed. I don't know whether that's true.
Even in the team, he came over, obviously, no one really knew much about him. And you see this massive bloke that didn't speak much English. But when he's angry, you don't want to be in his way because he's big and he's extremely strong. And he's unbelievably fit for prop. I would probably consider him as one of the three fittest forwards overall, compared from Lucy to number eight. So that in itself started gaining a lot of respect for him. Besides, if you take the age and stuff, because you can get, doesn't matter about the age, you kind of respect someone on, firstly, if you know him, if they come over from somewhere where you knew them, or they tend to build respect in the team. And I think Krill's the sort of guy that didn't say much and he just did his thing. And you need to have respect for him because he's firstly strong, powerful, fit. And then I think the more comfortable he got with English and starting to talk a bit more in the team, and especially like you say, scrum wise, he's one of the scrum leaders now, and he has meetings where he speaks as well and not just sit there. He started growing into that position as well, and he's the sort of bloke, if you ask him to scrum and make tackles and head breakdowns, he won't ask to do anything else. That's what he'll do, and he'll do it for 80 minutes, and he'll walk off after 80 minutes, and he'll won't even have a sweat or anything. So it's just sometimes freakish how he can do all that stuff and be the age that he is. And so I think in that sense, he's from where he came over and where he's now, I think he matured into the team, and the boys has got the respect for him just grew very quickly. And now he's considered one of the players that you almost miss him if he's not on the pitch, because he's got, even though he doesn't say something a lot or much, you can just feel his presence with just someone doing that little work, the unseen bits on the pitch, which other people don't see. And he's a quality scrummer as well.
Yeah, and he's got a new contract, I think.
Yeah, he's it was I back in South Africa, where they call him grandfather. We've got a Afrikaans word. I've got a special Afrikaans word which is called opa, which means grandfather. And once I said to him, if you sign at Gloucester, you will, that's what I'm going to call you from now on. So that's our little inside joke, and he loves it. So I'm really happy for him.
Good stuff.
You said that he's one of the three fittest forwards, one through eight. Where are you on that list?
It depends on what sort of fitness we want to classify, because I think if it comes to purely just running fitness, I won't consider myself as much of a runner, even though if it comes to game fitness and loads of mauls and breakdowns and carrying, I probably would put myself a bit more high on the list because that's stuff I enjoy. I don't know, it's just personal things, but probably overall, I probably want to not comment. I would probably find myself around the middle somewhere. Guys, especially in training, when it comes to training and running and stuff, you've got obviously Krill that I mentioned and Lewis Ludlow, which is unreal. And then one or two of the hookers are always usually quite fit, and like Seb and even Val as a prop, even though he's a big bloke, he's a great train like runner and trainer, and he loves that fitness challenges. So I'm happy to put myself in the middle.
You've got
And
some mobile young locks there as well, haven't you?
yeah,
Some
100%.
real
To be fair,
gazelles.
I mean, if you take Arthur and Freddie Thomas, they're young boys as well, and they
They're
can,
quite quick boys, aren't
when it comes to training and stuff, they are really, besides being young, they are actually off. If you take how big he is and how tall he is, he can actually quite move well as well. So that's why I'll humbly put myself in the middle and let the rest make their decisions.
they?
Well, when you said one of the three fittest, I just wondered whether that was Bronco related. And I was like, surely Kirill doesn't have one of the three fastest Broncos as a
You know what? I wouldn't be surprised if he's close to the top five in the Broncos. He is unbelievable in running and maintaining. It's the level of fitness that he's got. It's just, I don't know how he does it, but he tends to.
He was an Olympic wrestler, wasn't he?
Yeah,
And he was
unreal.
also a bobslayer. So his
Yeah.
fitness, I would
Yeah.
imagine, is
He
even.
he's I think where he gets everyone is he's got the mental toughness to do sort of exercises, which me as a rugby player tend to enjoy exercises in game related. He doesn't matter, he can do them both. So I'll definitely put Lewis in there for the running stuff. Probably one of the locks as well. I'll humbly say I'll put myself, like I said, in the middle, with Zach being very similar to me, Mercer. He's a sort of bloke that just loves playing the game as well. So, yeah.
Speaking of Zach, and just while we're doing, and this is the last player we'll ask you about, but he's obviously had an interesting year, with, not gaining international selection and things like that. And obviously, he's been public about his style of play not necessarily fitting Steve Borthwick's mold. How's he responded to that in camp? Are you able to give us any sort of about how he's doing and how he's going about his rugby?
Yeah, obviously that it was that period where he was playing good rugby, and there was one or two articles that came out about him and Steve Borthwick and that sort of stuff. And the playing, like you mentioned, the playing style, and it maybe not suit the way that Steve wanted him to play, or he doesn't suit the style they play, or whatever. But I just Me personally, when I spoke to him, being back row and stuff, I said probably his biggest challenge is to find his sort of style. He wants to play for Gloucester and really embrace that sort of style. Because I said to him, listen, we obviously tend to be with the mold we had over the last few years, being dominant and stuff. The way you play and stuff, we'll accept that as forwards, and we need to adapt to the way you play because that's what makes you a special player, and you've shown your qualities in England and overseas for the last few years. So there's no need for you to change. When the opportunity comes, it will come. I don't feel he needs to change his game to suit someone else's. Keep doing what you do and work, be good at it. And I think he's, since those articles, he's been just stepping up every weekend. If you take that, I think it was the semi-final of the Prem Cup and that Leicester Tigers game away where we beat them for the first time. I think those two games, he was actually, the games that he was playing actually unbelievable rugby, was teams that's considered to be very physical, very forward dominated. There's actually games he played surprisingly really well, and open games he's very comfortable with. So me observing and seeing him, he can definitely step up physically. It's just a matter of, like I say, if he gets chosen and if he gets the nod to be selected, I think he'll definitely grab it with both hands. He's very eager to show himself. And listen, for just the chats we had, he wants to give everything to Gloucester, being here for his first year, and make a statement, and I think he's been doing it, so hopefully he can do it for us this weekend as well.
And just finally, before we do a little quick fire question section, you signed a contract extension 2 months ago now. I think you're into your, this is your seventh season with Gloucester.
Yeah, there will be same, yeah.
Yeah. So obviously, well, Neil Fisler from the Rugby Paper reported that you may be going back to the Lions before then. So, that obviously didn't end up being the case. So just speak about the thoughts, in taking that decision, maybe not no homecoming as yet. Did George Skivington play any role? I know obviously, he's taken over from your father Johan in the past couple of years.
Yeah.
But yeah, just go over the sort of the mental process behind the decision.
Yeah, obviously, like you said, I when I came over the first time, I never planned being here this long. I was more excited about having a different opportunity and expanding my game and rugby because I was still fairly young. I think I came over when I was 20, 21. So I was fairly young, and I always heard about how tough and physical the Prem is, and you go through loads of games. So as a youngster, I thought to myself, well, that's where I was challenging you to come here and play in Europe and test yourself against the best. And was very excited about that. And then I kind of got into a stage where you play good rugby, but you, especially in the last year or two, and you don't get any you feel like you're kind of stuck as a player. And so I just felt I needed to maybe move on and try a different challenge again and see if something, if what is the problem? Because you as a player start thinking you've been playing so many games, Premiership, you've played Europe, you've played against the best, you've trying to prove yourself as a back row and as a player to play international rugby, and you're kind of stuck in that position where you play against a player that's international is being selected above you or getting opportunities, and you're playing just as well, and you get frustrated. So I thought to myself, listen, maybe I should just move on and try a different challenge, like I did when I came here, and trying to expand my game again and move on. And I sat down with Skibs and I said to him, listen, I it's nothing to do with Gloucester, it's nothing to do with the club. I just feel I maybe my game needs to change, or I need to get into a new mindset or something, because I'm enjoying it here, but obviously it's not working for me to get international recognition. And maybe moving back to SA, I can see if I can get play good rugby and put my hand up to get maybe a selection over there. And I just feel he had an honest chat with me, and we felt that we've been planning the last 2, 3 years. This year, next year is the 2 years we kind of targeted. And he said it will be obviously upsetting for him to have me in his plans and part of it for the last 3 years, and then the kind of the year that he's excited about, I leave. And I say to him, I understand what he means. And then, funny enough, it's just shows you how timing works. And then you kind of the club speaks to you and say, listen, you are almost qualifying for your British passport. That came up, and you kind of like, oh gee, what's the coincidence that in the year that you kind of want to go, that's coming up. And from a family perspective, my dad's like, you need to stay, you need to get this thing, this is a great opportunity. So that kind of put everything shifted his stuff a little bit as well. So we're getting close to British passport as well, which is, being a South African, is pretty big to get that. Just
You have
coming
to
from
take an exam there, Ruin.
it, I'll
Nick
tell you,
Evans did, didn't
it's
he? I think he
a
was saying you have to do a little quiz and
no,
then
no,
before
it's a very, very difficult process.
it.
And the life in the UK test that you need to do is one of the toughest stuff that you, I mean, there's nothing that can prepare you for it, not school or anything. So you go and you need to actually study for it, because I did it straight after. So when I injured my knee against La Rochelle last year, obviously you've got a lot of free time, and they were like, the club were like, listen, you need to do this if you want to apply for your British passport. You've been here long enough now, so you've got time now to do the test. And I obviously, as a South African, I was just like, all right, I'll go do the test. I know a little bit about England, and I hope it was enough. So you go to places that do the test, and you rock up there and you do the test. And then I realized that the test is absolutely something
Degree level.
you need to go and study, and you need to actually study quite hard. So I end up going on Amazon and buying myself a Life in the UK test book and doing a few tests and stuff. And I'll be honest, and after the second or maybe third time, I luckily got the test and passed it. And you wait a few months later and get it. So we're getting close to qualifying and getting the passport. But to all the South Africans that's playing in the Prem, they asked me about the same thing, and I said to him, all I can tell you is, if you think you're just gonna rock up there and get the test and get it through, you got it wrong. You need to study for it. It's very difficult. It's not just can I speak English and write it. It's a little bit more complicated, and that's how it happened.
Good stuff. Well,
Ruin
good luck with that
it
anyway.
is it is when you get the British passport, does that make you eligible for Wales and Scotland as well as England, or how does it work?
I don't know. That's actually a good question. I will now that you've asked that, I'll actually need to find out. I did think about it. I wasn't 100% does it qualify just for England itself, or do you, because they say it's a UK passport, does it qualify for other countries as well? That is a good question, because funny enough, if you, I know Duane and them that plays for Scotland, they also busy doing that stuff, and they also see it as a UK passport. So even though I know he plays in Scotland and stuff, so I'm not 100% sure. That is something that I'll definitely want to find out. So thanks for that
You won't
question.
have to try too hard. Gregor Townsend will be on the phone if you are eligible, let me tell you.
Well, I suppose on the spot, would you, if you were eligible for Wales or Scotland and you got the call, how would you feel?
I think my head's a little bit scrambled at the moment. I tend to lean always, I think, because I've been here long enough, and I'm a very frustrated in the sense of that I thought by now I would have had even just a few training camps at England and having opportunity to be training at that top level, a little bit frustrated in that sense. So my head and heart's leaning, trying to get back into the SA mix. I know they've got top quality players playing now, especially all of them being youngsters and stuff. But I mean, my goal and dream is to play international rugby. And I don't want to be arrogant enough to say, you're not good enough, I want to play for this country, or you're not good enough, I want to play. I think any player that loves the game want to test himself at the topest level. And if it can be at a country that's playing at the top level and playing against the top teams, that will be obviously amazing. So in that sense, obviously you want to play international. So if that opportunity arises and no one else happens, that is something to look at. But if you want to listen to your heart and stuff, you need to back yourself and try and get into that mix as well. So it's a little bit of both. I think I want to give myself a fair shot maybe to go back to South Africa or to get into the South African mix. And if that doesn't happen and you still get an opportunity somewhere else to play international rugby, you'll definitely grab it.
And yeah. Is it 6 or 8 for you, Ruan? I mean, have you got a preference? Do you care?
I wouldn't say I've got a preference, but I feel I'm at my strongest when I play at 6, blindside flank. I feel the way they get involved in the game is very similar to the way I want to play. It's obviously I've played loads of games at 8 as well, so I'm comfortable there to play there. 6s I feel suits my game. If you read, 6s hard ball carrier, do get through loads of tackles, be really good at mauling and that sort of stuff. It's stuff I pride myself on. So it's not like you've got like a guy like Zach that needs to do all of that, but then you need a bit of ball skills at the back of the scrum. You need to be holding a bit back for kicks and all that sort of stuff. So it's a little bit more thinking in a way, where 6 is very direct, you know what they expected from you.
Just very quickly, Ruan, I don't know if you were forwarded on the questions of our random rugby 15, the 15 quickfire questions.
No.
If not, don't worry. It's very on the spot anyway. It's 15 questions just to get to know you a little bit better. So it's no British passport test, so you don't need to worry about that. If you're happy to do that just for a quick 5 minutes, and then you can get on with the rest of your day.
Yeah, no worries.
Perfect. Nickname?
Ruthless.
Ruthless, nice. Best rugby memory?
Ooh. Is that in the last few years or overall?
Ever. Best rugby
I
memory.
I would say, I know it's a losing one, or I would say the Leicester Tigers game a few weeks ago was a good memory. I think the occasion itself for Ed and all that stuff was great. And then I would say my very similar, the Super Rugby semi-final 2017 at Ellis Park was unreal. And yeah, I would say those two are kind of like very similar.
Slightly different tone. Most embarrassing rugby memory?
Oh, geez. That is on the spot. Most embarrassing. I think it's more, my family sent it over to me a few weeks ago. We were playing, I think it was an Osprey Games or something, and they heard me say over the ref's mic to the player, "Stop being Tarzan," on the mic. And obviously in the game, you say that to someone thinking he's just being a bit all out there. And they just sent me a few memes of me saying Tarzan over the mic. So that was a bit embarrassing because I didn't figure that would be over the ref's mic.
It was the player.
I think it was Tipperick or the number 8 for Ospreys that as I took them all down and they had a few stomps on me on the floor. And I said, "All right, you're being tough, Tarzan." And then you just kind of hear it over the mic.
Pre-game tune.
I would say if it's a few hours before the game, it was more, I tend to go a bit to Afrikaans music, it's a bit more relaxed. But as we get into the changing room, Jamal is absolutely a classy DJ, and he gets onto the big JBL speaker, and he just anything that's got a little bit of singing, but a bit of beat to it, I'm fairly happy with.
Oh, so basically electronic
Yeah,
classic.
anything that's got a mixture of a little bit of club music, but a sing-along music as well. So you just can stay in that relaxed but still on the edge sort of vibe.
Post-game meal.
Definitely pizza, I would say. Pizza.
Yeah, that's mine too. Best player you've played against?
Angst. Anton Dupont.
Best player you've played with?
Yaku Krill will be in there. Franco Mostard.
Any non-saffers?
I'm trying to think. I know it's a bit early to say, but the way he sees Zach is a really good player, Mercer. He's a different back row than what I'm used to play. The way he speaks about the game and he does it. Owen Farrell,
Yeah.
quite a tough player to play. And I would put Marcus Smith and Alex Mitchell. Quite,
These are players you've never played with. These are players you've played against now, yeah.
yeah. Played with, I would say,
Zach or Franco or
that, yeah, I would.
you gave a pretty good selection.
Yeah, I mean, I think overall, someone that kind of just, yeah. Let me stay with those ones.
No, that's all
I
good.
because I want to say I in the beginning, Jake Pelledri, when he was in that little prime scene of him, he was absolutely unreal to watch and play. I would say he kind of you almost wanted to play with him when he was in that prime, where he just like never want to go down in any of his carries. I don't know how he did it. I'm still trying to work out how he did it,
For a
but
couple of years, he was something else, wasn't he, Jake,
He
before
was
injury?
absolutely, for those, I would say that 2, 3 years, he was unreal to play with.
Yeah.
Favorite player right now?
Anton Dupont.
Rugby idol.
Idol. I would probably say I'm still Dwayne Vermeulen, I think, was someone that I would say. Especially if you were looking a little bit of the Springboks documentary thing about the World Cup, and his own documentaries that he's spoken about family growing up and stuff, and the way he played the game, I just enjoyed like the way watching him and stuff. Yeah, I would say him.
Great player.
Favorite stadium?
Oh, that is a. I mean, Twickenham is good to play at, but I just the times that I played at Ellis Park with his history as a kid growing up, and I mean, being a '95 baby, and you hear about the '95 history, World Cup and stuff, walking down that long tunnel as you go down and you get up to the top. As a young boy, you just always everyone talked about that tunnel going down, and halftime people were complaining, away teams were complaining, running up that long tunnel going up. So I would probably say that stadium is just, I think it's just the history about it as being a South African.
Occupation. Oh, sorry, no, I skipped one. Favorite gym exercise?
Probably triceps.
Nice. Occupation if rugby didn't exist.
I do like real estate.
Okay.
But not necessarily buying and renting, buying, renovating, that sort of.
Yeah.
I'm kind of like making something that's old or ugly, turn it into nice, and making people that want something nice to make it nice for them, sort of thing.
Superstitions.
What exactly is superstitions? If you
Well, as in before a game, do you put your left sock on before your right, or do you wear the same pair of boxers for every game or something?
I always
I have none.
on the way to the game, I always drink a Red Bull, but since they've got these different flavors, I tend to go for a different flavor almost every game. But weird enough, I don't know why I hate drinking the same flavor every time we go to a game. So my missus even knows that when I go to a game, we tend to get different color Red Bulls the night before, the day before. And I wouldn't say I'm too fussy about, there's certain stretches before a game that I like to do if I feel, okay, my back's loose, then for some reason my whole body feels better. I don't know what it is, but I'll do certain stretches before a game, just before I go out. But I'll probably say the Red Bull is quite a big one for me. I don't know what it is about the Red Bull, the flavor or something, but I tend to feel like on the way to the stadium, if it's on the bus or in the car, just to sip on the Red Bull.
Yeah, well, I mean, that makes sense before a game, but I guess the changing of flavor is slightly quirky.
I know, it's weird. I can't attend to, there's the yellow one, the blue one, and the green one, and then obviously your normal blue, purple color one. But there's, I don't know why it is, but even if I've got a massive Red Bull fridge in my man cave.
You got chairs in the company, Ruin.
I would love some. I would love some. Yeah, I don't drink a lot of Red Bull. I'll say that. I don't drink every day a Red Bull or anything, but I tend to enjoy them on, like, even if you have your off season when you tend to have a few drinks, I don't mind mixing a Red Bull in there for a bit of flavor.
It's the one with vodkas in that tastes the best.
I do tend to, give you a bit more energy than you need.
Yeah,
they get you going.
Yeah. You'll be on the floor by halftime. Shout out to Red Bull. Rugby law you would change?
This sounds a bit weird being a back row, but I do hate the jackal going for the ball rule, because I feel it's very, very 50-50. I feel sometimes players do release the ball, sometimes they don't. I feel sometimes you as a cleaner don't get to the ball because there's other teams' tackle is still in the way. I feel it slows down the game because it's almost like it becomes a guessing game. I feel teams come in more on the side to try and jackal to slow the ball down. So I think jackaling, if they can take it out of the game, would have a massive impact on how teams attack, really. Or I would say that only the guy that makes the tackle really can go for the ball or something, but I just feel like it's such a 50-50 call, and it's had such big impacts in big games where if you re-watch the replay, the guy was coming on the side or there was someone blocking him to cleaning. It's such a, like, maybe just get out of the game sort of thing.
I think we as a podcast agree with you wholeheartedly, and it's fairly fascinating to hear a back row say it as well.
But yeah.
Fair share of guests say it, but most of them are wingers, I think.
Well, for the vast majority of my life and Nick's, what we call the jackal was just straightforward preventing release. It was all about the penalty. And exactly. I find it's difficult to this day getting around that. It just looks like preventing release to me.
No, I agree, especially because I find myself sometimes, if you are a ball carrier, firstly, you run into two blokes that you need to try and get through, and then by the time you get hit the floor, then there's another bloke that's trying to steal the ball from you. But then you feel like there's so much that happened before that. Is he even legal? Did he release? Is he not on the side? That slows the ball down. That's maybe a penalty for, against. And it just slows the ball. Like, it feels like it slows the game and the attack down. I think there's different ways that you can maybe turn the ball around, or it puts more pressure on the defense to tackle maybe better or something. I don't know what we can do, but that's how it feels.
And lastly, best thing about working in rugby?
Seeing, I would say, having the privilege to make people happy that's supporting the game. I've met a lot of people that say how, especially being at Gloucester, how they've come to watch us play because they've had a bad week, like I said before, and watching the game today and you guys winning really helped me through the week or made my weekend better or that sort of stuff. That is a great feeling. I enjoy also how young boys, being a young boy and having a dad that played the game, it learns you a little bit of discipline as you grow up. I tend to, when I was young, you had kids that was unreal talented in rugby, but because they had no discipline, they kind of faded away when you needed it. So I love the discipline aspect of it. And then the travel, that you get to see different places and people. And yes, you travel and you stay in hotels and you don't tend to put the club pays for it, but you got the opportunity to see different places, different environments and stuff. So I would say those two things are the things I enjoy probably the most in rugby.
Great stuff. And this is the 108th episode or something, and no one's ever said that the opportunity to make other people's weeks. So that's a nice original answer to finish. So thank you for doing that, Ruin. Sorry for putting you on the spot slightly.
No,
I did forward on the questions to be that they obviously got lost somewhere. Yeah, so, well, we'll keep chatting a little. We've got a certain Billy Vunipola-shaped discussion to have, but I won't make you endure that unless you really want to. But if...
I know too little to say anything.
Probably for the best.
We're all in the same boat, I suspect, Ruin.
Yeah,
but we're allowed to speculate, I think. Yeah, Ruin, go well this weekend, and it's been great to meet you, and also it'll be... I'm sure you will wear an international shirt at some point. It'll be fascinating to see what colour that is. But yeah, obviously, fingers crossed for you going forward.
No, thank you. Thank you for your time and having a chat and all the best.
Enjoy your battle with Mr. Negri on Saturday.
Yeah, looking forward. Thank you.
Looking forward to
it.
Guys. Take care, Ruin. Yeah, let's just do a little 5 minutes on the Billy incident. I feel like it is worth a mention. Has anyone seen the footage? Because I have, and it's quite good viewing.
I've only seen the pictures. There's actual video footage, is there? Of him top off in the club.
Exactly. And I do think there was initial allegations about him threatening with chairs and things like that. It does look like that was completely pulled out of nowhere. The footage is him obviously resisting slightly, not putting his top on. Then he gets tased once. It doesn't do anything, and then he gets tased again, and that one is slightly more effective. So,
I can't. Do you know what? I can't really get wildly excited about this. I mean, my attitude, anyway, is every sportsman and every sportswoman gets one pass from me for an alcohol-related incident, unless it involves criminality. Obviously, drink driving, assault—that's a different matter. So Billy, big tough boy, he's been a pro, what, 13 years now, 14 years? No history of really getting trolled and making an idiot of himself. He's gone off to Mallorca with a few lads, I don't know, friends, family for a weekend. You know, you go to Mallorca and Palma for late night bars and drinking. That's what you do. And it gets a bit lively sometimes. And Monday mornings in the Mallorca police court is pretty busy. They shifted him on, €200 fine, go home, sober up. I'm not sure it's any much more than that. You can get all moral about it and start preaching, but Saracens have got a long track record of letting their players having a bit of a downtime at Oktoberfest, Las Vegas training, Mallorca in previous trips. So unless there's something we don't know, I wouldn't be getting wildly excited about it.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with you, Brent. Look, I mean, one of the things that stuck out to me was the fact that he'd been teetotal for 2 years. And he then obviously went on one of Sarri's social and decided that he was going to have a few drinks. And I guess having been teetotal for 2 years, his system must have had a fair bit of a jolt. So, yeah. I think you're right. He doesn't have a record of doing this. I think he's at a. I think one of the things about it is that he's actually. I didn't realize. I think he's still only 28, isn't he?
I think he's a bit older than that. But
I think he's in his 30s.
I thought 31. We have to look that one up. But Okay. Yeah, at crossroads of his career, that's quite an important moment.
Well, that's the point that I was going to make. He is at a bit of a crossroads, you know. I mean, obviously he's linked with Montpellier. You know, I guess if they're being, you know, very po-faced about it, they might take a very dim view of it. But overall, he the one thing that strikes me about him is that he's obviously made quite an effort. If he's gone teetotal, he's trying to regain something that he thinks he's lost in terms of either conditioning or impact. And I don't think that I've not thought that he's played really badly, but I don't think that he's been consistently where he was. And you've got to remember, he was a really at the beginning of the Eddie Jones thing, he was a massively influential figure, a really significant force. And I never forget the try that he scored against Leinster that, you know, that clinched that European Cup final, which was just pure, you know, pure Billy Butler in terms of power and, you know, and abrasiveness. And I hope that he, what I hope is that the, you know, the next stage of his career, which will be, you know, the last installment of it, is a success, and that he finds that wherever he goes. Because I still think that there's probably something in the
tank.
In Billy the Tank's tank.
Yeah. Funnily enough, it did. I was watching the other, I was thinking how well Tom Willis was playing for the last couple of weeks. And I just thought to myself, I think this is, he's not going to get the send-off at Saracens that he perhaps wants. You know, he wants to be starting number eight in the team that wins the Premiership title. That might yet happen, but I don't think he is the starting number eight at the moment. I think Tom Willis is the starting eight. And I did just wonder how he felt about that, because he's been such a huge player for Saracens. I mean, to my mind, second only to Owen Farrell in there, and perhaps Alex Good. But, you know, he is right up there as an absolute sort of monument at Saracens. And I was just wondering how he was coping with all that mentally in the last month or so.
I'm sure that it would be difficult. Yeah. I mean, no question.
I mean, yeah, it would feel like quite a natural response to something like that. He's obviously been teetotal for the last 2 years, presumably with Rugby World Cup 2023 in mind. He obviously didn't have the greatest day in that semi-final against South Africa with the drop ball at the end, etc. I wonder whether it was quite a natural response to that. But no, I agree. I agree with both of your responses, and certainly much more mature than mine, which is, I see the footage and I have a good giggle from it, which is maybe I need a conk on the head from that as well.
And rugby just needs to calm itself sometimes as well. You know, anybody who's played rugby at any level and been on tour, you know, almost there for the grace of God, go I. I'm not exonerating, but it happens. As long as it doesn't happen habitually and serially, unless something else comes up, I'm willing to give anybody at least one pass.
He's 31, so 31, you're right. Yeah. But he's not, you know, I mean, he
could have some very good years if he got to the right club and got in shape. Well, I think he's in shape now. He's just not in great form at the moment.
No.
No, agreed. Well, let's get just some predictions for the weekend. We're kind of out of time, but let's just get your two semi-final wins in the Champions Cup. I'm going a Leinster-Toulouse final. Brendan, what are you going with?
It's very difficult to argue against that, but we got caught out a bit in the quarterfinals, didn't we, by just missing the notion of an upset win.
I'm not backing Harlequins. Well, I didn't back them last time.
I'm not saying Lightning can't strike twice, but I am sort of. I think Quins have had their extraordinary win. In fact, they've had two wins in France, haven't they, in this competition? I'd have a look at the other match. I think Northampton have a huge match in them. And I'd love to see Leinster put under pressure a bit. And I'd love to see a ref them at the breakdown. If those two things happen, that could be a bit closer than some are thinking. I'm hoping anyway. Leinster and Toulouse.
I'd have to say, given the way that the predictions have gone so far, it's a no-brainer. Harlequins against Northampton.
Come on, England. I mean, yeah, well, we'll see. Hopefully we manifest that. But yeah, I agree with you, Brendan. I think Northampton Leinster is probably the one to keep.
Yeah, I found it intriguing that Northampton, I'm not sure that it was interesting this last weekend. They rested some players. I'm not sure that they weren't quite on it against Quinns. Quinns were on it against them. Quinns will have to do incredibly well to win against Toulouse. I don't think that either of these English teams are out of it.
No.
If they start really well and they put pressure on both of these opponents, I think that neither of them are so imperious that they can't, you know, that they couldn't be toppled. I think it's less likely that it'll happen to Toulouse, although they were incredibly quiet in the first half against Exeter when they played them. And Quinns are, you know, they've got a real sense of belief that has come since they got that shellacking at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Mm-hmm. And Saracens. Since yeah. then, they've been transformed, and you wouldn't write them off. But I'd be like you. I'd say that it'll be a Northampton Toulouse final.
One little caveat with Leinster. I mean, you know, we all hate. You know, the big boys are there to be shot at. I think they could have rested their first team or their first 23. One weekend too many.
Too long.
I mean, they've had 2 weekends off. In fact, this will be their first match in 21 days. Now, okay, the Irish guys are quite used to that in one way. They seem to be able to come in and out. But if Northampton got off to a flyer against a Leinster team that took 20 minutes to get going again and found themselves 14 points down, say, that could be very interesting. So Northampton, if they could just get out of the blocks, I think they've got a shout.
Yeah, I must admit, I didn't. There was something about them against Quinns that just made me think that, you know, they've also got to, you know, bring their team back into alignment in a way. But you know, I do think that they're capable of an upset. But you know, I think I'd go. In all seriousness, you've got to go with the two home sides.
Yeah, those will be mine. But I can't wait for us to look silly next week as I volunteered us up.
Yeah. Might change the habits of a season.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, honestly, this is our third season now, or second and a half. We've never had a worse season of predictions.
I think that's true.
Yeah, so we'll chalk that off come summertime and start again. But yeah, all right. Well, next week we've got Mike Friday with us. We'll look back on those semi-finals as well as a bit of Sevens Olympic stuff. So yeah, I look forward to seeing you both then.
Brilliant.
Good. Cheers, Ollie.
Thanks for listening to this week's edition of the Rugby Paper Podcast. And don't forget to subscribe on whichever podcast platform you use and recommend the show to your friends. The Rugby Paper is available to buy every Sunday. And to make sure you don't miss it, subscribe through our print, digital and online options at therugbypaper.co.uk/subscriptions. That's therugbypaper.co.uk/subscriptions to get all our content for as little as 14p per day.